Good morning. I'd like for everybody, if you will, to turn to Ephesians 4. Paul says, I therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, beseech you that you walk worthy in the vocation wherewith you're called, the work you're called, with all lowliness and meekness, with longsuffering, forbearing one another in love, endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. There is one body and one Spirit, even as ye are called in one hope of your calling, one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all, who is above all and through all and in you all. But unto every one of us is given grace according to the measure of the gift of Christ. Wherefore he saith, when he ascended up on high, he led captivity captive and gave gifts unto men. Now that he ascended, what is it? But that he also descended first into the lower parts of the earth. He that descended is also the same, is the same also that ascended up far above the heavens, that he might fill all things. And he gave some apostles, and some prophets, and some evangelists, and some pastors, and some teachers, for the perfecting of the saints, for the work of the ministry, for the edifying of the body of Christ, till we all come into the unity of the faith and of the knowledge of the Son of God, unto a perfect man, unto the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ, that we henceforth be no more children, tossed to and fro, and carried about with every wind of doctrine by the sleight of men and the cunning craftiness whereby they lie in wait to deceive. But speaking the truth in love, may grow up into him in all things, which is the head, even Christ, from whom the whole body, fitly joined together and compacted by that which every joint supplieth, according to the effectual working and the measure of every part, maketh increase of the body unto the edifying of itself in love. This I say, therefore, and testify in the Lord, that ye henceforth walk not as other Gentiles walk, in the vanity of their mind, having the understanding darkened, being alienated from the life of God through the ignorance that is in them, because of the blindness of their hearts, who being past feeling have given themselves over unto lasciviousness, to work all uncleanliness with greediness. But ye have not so learned Christ, if so be that ye have heard him and have been taught by him, as the truth is in Jesus, that ye put off concerning the former conversation of the old man, which is corrupt according to the deceitful lust, and be renewed in the spirit of your mind, that ye put on the new man, which after God is created in righteousness and true holiness. Wherefore, putting away lying, speak every man truth with his neighbor, for we are members one of another. Be ye angry and sin not, let not the sun go down upon your wrath, neither give place to the devil. Let him that stole steal no more, but rather let him labor, working with his hands, the thing which is good, that he may have to give to him that needeth. Let no corrupt communication proceed out of your mouth, but that which is good to the use of edifying, that it may minister grace unto the hearers. And grieve not the Holy Spirit, whereby ye are sealed unto the day of redemption. Let all bitterness, wrath, anger, clamor, and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice. And be kind one to another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as Christ hath forgiven you. Has anybody gave much thought to that phrase in Scripture, or considered it much? Many people think that they know God through Christ, and they actually don't. They think they have life's answers, but most don't. They think they're their own boss. They have deep understanding of life, business, family, Christ, the Scriptures, and yet they don't. So it tends to be that they're walking in the vanity of their own minds. What I would like to do within the next hour or so would be to discuss what is it, how do I know if I'm doing it, how do I know if I'm walking in the vanity of my own mind, and how can I discern if somebody else is doing it? In order to do that, I plan on expounding a little bit on 17 to 32, the verses there, focusing on 17 to 32, and then maybe taking those scriptures and making them more applicable, practical. How can we actually apply some discernment and some wisdom in that? Verse 17, "This I say therefore, and testify in the Lord, that ye henceforth walk not as other Gentiles walk, in the vanity of your own mind." Ephesians 2:2, "Wherein in time past ye walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince and power of the air, the spirit that now worketh in the children of disobedience." Colossians 1:21 says, "And that ye were sometimes alienated and enemies in your mind by wicked works." What it tends to give a picture of is doing wrong and living wrong with a air of deception that the prince and power of the air has given that works in the children of disobedience, that allows people to perceive things as in a way that they're not, and usually its underlying deception is some sort of evil or wicked type of motives of some sort. Flesh, self. Verse 18, "Having the understanding darkened, being alienated from the life of God through the ignorance that is in them because of the blindness of their heart." Coincides with Romans 1:21, "Because they that when they knew God glorified Him not as God, neither were they thankful, but became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened." The picture that I kind of get is that God has a life that He wants for us. Because of the prince and power of the air, because of our own selfish nature and desires, because of sometimes illogical thinking, it alienates us from the peace, from the joy, from the grace that God wants for us, that He's preordained for us, the life of a Christian that is more of a meek and contrite spirit. Verse 19, "Who being past feeling have given themselves over to lasciviousness, to work all uncleanness with greediness." So again, it coincides. They're given over, I hate to say given over to the vanity of their own minds, but they're given over to their own wants and desires, and there's almost like a deception that happens because of an ego. And a lot of times when we say ego, you know, we know that as a really bad thing, but of course we wouldn't be the one with the ego, with the self-centeredness. Although we do kind of like to talk about ourselves. We do like to explain, you know, the things that we're doing, the victories that, even the worldly victories in work and fishing and recreation and things like that. We like to talk about those things. And we still kind of like to think that we don't have an ego. But verse 18 does go along with Romans 1:21, "Because when they knew God, they glorified Him not as God, neither were they thankful, but became vain in their imaginations." I'm sorry, verse 19. 1 Timothy 4:2, "Speaking lies and hypocrisy, having their conscience seared with a hot iron, for in time past of our life may suffice us to have wrought the will of the Gentiles. See, the Gentiles, being separated from God, didn't know the life of God. The Israelites, given the law, were able to at least know what God wanted of them through the law, and therefore they could live a comparably clean life without necessarily knowing God, a deeper relationship with God. They would be able to kind of do the God's will. So therefore, they would experience and be able to somehow, somewhat, lead a life that God wanted, but it was all external, not knowing the internal there. Verse 22, that ye... If we go to verse 22, that ye have put off concerning the former conversations of the old man, which is corrupt to the deceitful lust. So, as the Israelites, Christ coming into the picture, bringing in the grace that allows the person to move from an old man to a new man, is now bringing in a more complete picture to where we can see the heart of God and not just operate based on what we're told, but we're able to operate with more of a discernment. And some of those things that we are called to put off would be anger, wrath, malice, blasphemy, filthy communication, is what Colossians 3:8 lists for us. Now, when we look at trying to get a deeper, more complete picture, to have more discernment, to get a better understanding, that stuff is mainly hidden in the old man, because we can't exactly see everything clearly while we still have the old man put on. But when we put the new man on, where it says in verse 23, and being renewed in the spirit of your mind. So the renewing of the mind, Romans 12, the renewing of the mind is a regenerated mind that now is able to make some discernment on the things of the world, the things of God. It's seen more clearly. And that you put on the new man, which after God is created in righteousness and true holiness, wherein putting away lying, speak every man truth with his neighbor, for we are members one of another. So we know in verse Romans 12, we're to be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of the mind, that ye prove what is the good and acceptable perfect will of God. In Romans 6, therefore we are buried with him by baptism into death, that like as Christ raised up from the dead by the glory of the Father, even so we should walk in newness of life. Romans 7, but we now are delivered from the law, that being dead wherein we were held, that we should serve in newness of spirit and not in the oldness of the letter. And then Romans 12:21, be not overcome of evil, but overcome evil with good. Goes on to say, verse 26, be not angry and sin not. Let not the sun go down upon your wrath, neither give place unto the devil. Let him that stole steal no more, but rather labor, working with his hands the thing which is good, that he may have in order to give to him that needeth. So while we have the old man on, there's almost through our own lust, deceit, there's almost a blindness to the truth that comes through the gospel, that comes through Christ. It's like Paul, where he's going through life and he has scales on his eyes. And those scales come off when he gets reality, the reality of Christ. And what that does is it allows him to then be able to view the entire world through different circumstances, a different type of vision, a different type of understanding. Verse 29, let no corrupt communication proceed out of your mouth, but that which is good to the use of edifying, that it may minister grace unto the hearers. Verse 30, and grieve not the Spirit, whereby ye are sealed unto the day of redemption. Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking be put away from among you with malice. If we go look at 1 Thessalonians 5, wherefore comfort yourselves together and edify one another, even as also ye do. And we beseech you, brethren, to know them which labor among you and are over you in the Lord and admonish you, and to esteem them very highly in love for their work's sake, and be at peace among yourselves. So the calling, certainly as believers, is to be able to submit ourselves to each other, specifically authority within our lives, but being able to submit to each other, to have a love for the brethren, for the ministry, for Christ, for His body, that we wouldn't try to tarnish it, that we would seek to edify and encourage each other. One of the dangers that we fall in, and we should be able to look at our own weaknesses before we start pinpointing the weaknesses of others. Titus 3:3, for we ourselves were sometimes foolish, disobedient, deceived, serving diverse lusts and pleasures, living in all malice and envy, hateful and hating one another. James 4:11, speak not evil one of another, brethren. He that speaketh evil of his brother and judgeth his brother speaketh evil of the law and judgeth the law. And if he judge the law, thou art not a doer of the law, but a judge of the law. Mark 11:25, and when ye stand praying, forgive if ye have aught against any, that your Father also which is in heaven may forgive you. So there's a calling of Scripture to see in ourselves the dangers, the evil, sin, more than you would see it in your brother. And if we are Christians, I believe that we are going to have, if we judged ourselves, we wouldn't be judged by another. If we were looking at ourselves and our faults and our own understanding, and our own failures, our own weaknesses, the challenges in our lives, then we probably wouldn't have enough time to go pinpointing everybody else and worried about their problems. And if you're clear enough that you can do that, then I guess that's between you and the Lord. When we go to expound the vanity of their own mind, so we think we're clear. You know, we're sinless. You know, we've somehow obtained to the higher calling than everybody else in the room. Anybody feel that way? Anybody have attained? I mean, I don't feel like I have. And I'm sure there are plenty of people in this room, my wife, my children, that could very well testify that I haven't. And that's probably the case with every other brother sitting in this room. So, if how do we know that we are judging ourselves, that we aren't walking blindly, that we're not in the vanity of our own mind, that we're not doing as other Gentiles did? How do we know that we are that way? First, I think we have to look at what is walking in the vanity of your own mind. Then I would like to discuss, okay, now, how do we apply that to ourselves? And then after we apply it to ourselves, can we actually have the discernment to know if somebody else is doing it? Now, this isn't saying, you know, I'm right, they're wrong. I think it's looking for enough clarity, judgment, discernment to know, first, am I doing it? Then are they doing it? What is walking in the vanity of your own mind? I think it is seeing things and situations about yourself or yourself as an individual through your mind's eye as being one way, and the reality of God is that it's actually different. One of the examples that I would use is the whole transgender thing going around in society. So you have people that actually, young children, who say, I'm not a boy, I'm a girl, but they're a boy. But somehow they don't really connect with the common picture, the common stereotype that gets presented on boys. They more connect maybe with a different picture. So because of that, they want to say, well, I'm a girl. It isn't necessarily true. I mean, it's absolutely not true. The challenge is, and the reality is, they're not a girl. They don't fit in, maybe, to the stereotypes that have been put among them. And then they're picked on, which helps them reinforce their logos. But that vanity of their own mind is saying, I'm that. And then you have people that are that way. And then they'll come and say, well, I don't know why you can't accept me for who I am. You know, so you have the boy that thinks he's a girl, and then you can't accept him for who he is. And it's like, well, if a person says, okay, I can accept you for a confused, deceived, struggling young man that doesn't really have a grip on reality, I can accept that. But it sounds like he can't accept himself for who he is. You see, it's walking in the vanity of his own mind. He doesn't understand his actual situation. And then he's around other people that are lying to him, saying, well, you're different. Somehow God messed up or something is what they're saying, claiming, which just isn't true. So to me, that thinking you're one way and actually not being that way is an example of walking in the vanity of your own mind. And even if other people agree with you, it doesn't change reality. Another example, social media. I literally know of a person probably 10 years ago, 15 years ago when I had social media. This person puts on social media, whatever it was, some sort of either Valentine's Day or an anniversary or something, and she says on social media, oh, my husband, love of my life, just buttering this whole thing way up. Literally 3 months later, it wasn't like filing for divorce. She was divorced. In 3 months of that, how does that happen? Either she was trying to lie to everybody else or she was lying to herself the whole time. I think she was trying maybe both in some form. She kind of thought that way and she was so... It's sporadic, irrational thinking. It's unlogical nature. It's like trying to make straight logic out of something that's bent. So you've got this bent logic and you're trying to think about it straightly. Well, if you see it bent, and the logic is bent, then you can at least like make sense of it, but it doesn't make it reality. It still makes it bent. It doesn't make it straight. Okay, seeing the world and situations and the vanity of your mind is like looking through a stained glass window. And what I mean by that, I want to give you guys a picture, and I would kind of like to use this because it helps me kind of get an idea of what I want to do in my life here. Just to use a small illustration before I get into this, one thing that kind of helps me when thinking about am I a Christian, am I not a Christian, in Luke 2, Jesus' parents, Mary and Joseph, they had left the synagogue. So they just left the house of God. They were on their way back, and they think Jesus is with them. They go about 3 days, and then they realize Jesus is not with them. So here they thought he was with them the whole time, 12-year-old Jesus, he's back at the temple. Not with them. Luke, what was it, 24. In Luke 24, the disciples were mourning. They were crying out. They did not think Jesus was with them and the loss, and there he was among them the whole time. So actually, neither one of them actually had a grip on reality. The one Jesus was with them, the one he wasn't with them. So, there's a form of reality that we have. We have a reality, and we look through these windows. But the reality gets distorted based on the colors of the stained glass window. And those stained glass windows come from experiences that we've had in life. They come from our background. They come from who our parents were. How did they act? And it just totally changes the view that we have on reality. Now, all of us, at least at some point in time, have had a stained glass window. We haven't always seen things with perfect clarity. But what does it take to go from a totally distorted reality to a clear reality? To a reality that we can see truth as it is. We can see the truth about ourselves. We can see the truth about others. And we can see the truth about the world. We can read the scriptures with absolute clarity because we want the truth more than we love our own egos. So the question is the vanity of their own mind. Okay, so if we look further into it, there is a story that I have here to question why do people actually have a totally stained glass window, 100% stained. They've lost their minds. They've gone physically insane. Okay, one of the head physicians in some hospital, and he's received the highest honors and some of the most coveted awards within the whole thinking realm, said that he doesn't know for sure exactly why people lose their minds. And he doesn't think anybody knows either. Because there are some people that get dementia, that have certain circumstances, and they have a actual different thinking. Like if you dissected their brain, they would somehow be physically, chemically different than other people. But there are some people, they have no difference whatsoever. No difference. That still go insane. So this doctor says that many people who go insane find an insanity, a feeling of importance that they were unable to achieve in the world of reality. He says, in his quote, "I have a patient right now whose marriage proved to be a tragedy. She wanted love, gratification, children, and social prestige, but life blasted all of her hopes. Her husband didn't love her. He refused to even eat with her and forced her to serve his meals in his room upstairs. She had no children, no social standing. She went insane, and in her imagination, she divorced her husband and resumed her maiden name. She now believes she is married into English aristocracy, and she insists on being called Lady Smith. And as for children, she imagines now that she has a new child every night. Each time I call on her, she says, 'Doctor, I had a baby last night.' Life once wrecked all her dream ships on the sharp rocks of reality, but in the sunny fantasy isles of insanity, All her barkentines race into port with canvases billowing and the wind singing through the mast. Tragic? Oh, I don't know. This is what the doctor says. If I could stretch out my hand and restore her sanity, I wouldn't do it. Doesn't sound like a doctor I want. But he continues to say, she is much happier as she is. So my question is if some people are so hungry for importance that they actually go insane to get it, imagine what miracle you and I can give and achieve by giving people honest appreciation and interest into their lives on this side of sanity. Not only do people go insane, I've seen people get divorced over debt. Next to drive them divorced over because they think in their mind somehow being with this other person is going to be better than their wives. The grass is always greener on the other side. I've seen people bury themselves in debt. I've seen people take on mass amounts of problem because of a feeling of importance that they so dramatically long for, and somehow they are not getting it through the Scriptures or through Christ. And you might think that that story is like this one-off kind of story, right? That just happens to crazy people, like way out there in New Zealand or something. Like I work at a one of our clients has a rehab type place. I don't know exactly what they do. It's called Angel Intervention, and I get ready to walk into this business after working on the windows out front, and I just open the door and I'm coming in. I get three people sitting down, almost jump out of their chairs. And then the lady that owns the place kind of runs at me in a tiptoeing kind of manner. It's like, shh, 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 don't slam the door, don't slam the door. So I, you know, catch the door real quick. And she points over and says, she's getting a mind bath. And I look like, mind bath? Like, this is true. So I look over and there is another woman laying in like this tanning bed kind of thing with these headsets on. Like, I'm thinking, what sort of like delusional world do people live in? When all the truth that is in Scripture is there for somebody that solely loves the truth. Everything is there, and yet we walk and people walk in the vanity of their own mind because their own desire, ego, unsensibility to be reasoned with drives them to just total chaos, and then that creates just dramatic problems within their lives. So to try to define it a little more, I just think that walking in the vanity of your own mind is wanting to live in a reality and actually believing your reality is a certain way when it's just not that way. It's just not that way. That's why people wear certain clothes that they wear is the association thing. You know, that's why people wear makeup. Because then they say, look how long my eyelashes are. Well, they're not really that long. You're wearing, you know, different eyelashes. So they're just not. But it's not loving the truth. How do you know and I know if we're doing that, if we're actually walking in the vanity of our own mind? If you're doing it, you're probably fantasizing about either people, situations, or events. And after fantasizing about them, you feel uplifted about how things are going to go into your future, only to realize later on that those events haven't taken place the way that you thought they would, and then you end up disappointed. So you've made decisions thinking there's just going to be this major, great, wonderful life happening afterwards, and it just didn't pan out that way. And then you start to see a pattern of those decisions over and over and over. So you're building up these delusions of grandeur, expecting them to turn into this sharp reality, and then you're just cut short by this like down kind of reality. So I think the bare truth is that if we have to realize almost all people that we meet actually feel superior to us in some way, in some form. And if we want to act like Christians and be Christians, then I think we'll let them realize that in some way that we can recognize their importance. Now, the sad thing is usually and frequently those that have the least amount of justification for this feeling of achievement kind of bolster themselves and their egos up somewhat kind of obnoxiously or loud or some sort of a show of arrogance and conceit, which it's actually really nauseating if it comes from us. So, how do we go from a totally stained glass to a clear window, clear vision? Another story. One day, Ben Franklin, if you've heard of Benjamin Franklin, was a loudmouth youth. One day when Ben Franklin was a loudmouth youth, an old Quaker friend took him aside and kind of lashed out at him with a few words. And he said, "Ben, you are impossible. Your opinions have a slap in them for everyone who differs from you. They have become so offensive that nobody cares for them. Your friends find that they enjoy themselves better when you're not around. You know so much that no man can tell you anything. And indeed, no man is going to try, for the effort would lead to only discomfort and hard work. So you are not likely ever to know any more than you do now, which is very little." I think that situation helped change Benjamin Franklin, because there was a man that took it to heart and went later, and he really did little on criticizing other people. And I do feel that if a person is going to criticize somebody else, it's better just to criticize them to their face, as opposed to criticizing everybody to everybody else. You know, because a lot of times, you know, especially if we're walking in the vanity of our own minds with a really stained window, we want to play the victim. You know, but if you play the victim, even without a clear sense of reality, you assume the role of a victim, and that's just never good. I mean, and I don't know how you find repentance. Like, somebody that plays the victim all the time, I don't know how you ever repented, because it was somebody else's fault. You know, it was the Amish's fault. They taught me wrong. It was my church's fault. It was my parents' fault. It was their fault, but I came to the Lord. So many people who actually walk in the vanity of their own minds don't take responsibility for their own actions. And that's typically because in their vain minds, they're not responsible for having done anything wrong. Of course, this is false thinking, because as humans, we're typically more wrong than we're right. I mean, it's actually said, if you know for a fact that you could be right 55% of the time, you could go to Wall Street, play in the stock market, make billions of dollars. Just 55% of the time. If you knew for a fact you could be right 55% of the time. And if you know for a fact that you can be right 55% of the time, then we should not criticize other people, because we don't know if we're wrong that time while we're criticizing them. And that would be one way to start clearing your window. And from my experiences, those who have the most twisted thinking assume themselves to be right the majority of the time, and their circumstances are usually that of victims. You see, often we perceive in others the weaknesses we most need to address in ourselves. And then we blame and condemn them while excusing ourselves for our own decisions based on our own stained glass windows and our own egos that got built up because we thought things were going to be these delusions of grandeur, which would be so much better than what they are. Now, we should accept complete responsibility for the way things are and resolve to work on changing ourselves before seeking to change others. And I think this is one of the truest measures of a person of a strong character. Now, if you take your life into your own hands, what happens? Something really scary happens when you take your life into your own hands. There's nobody else to blame. I personally don't have a hard time saying I was wrong. I usually say I'm sorry. And there are times, maybe it's wrong of me, I say I'm sorry. I really don't have anything to be sorry about. And people say, well, it's not your fault. Somebody says, well, you know, my daughter isn't home and she had left, you know, so many years ago and we're kind of have a disconnected relationship. And I just say, I'm sorry. Maybe I'm sorry for the situation more. I don't really have a problem saying I was wrong, because I think if we're able to say we were wrong, that's just a little way of saying I actually know more now than I did yesterday or when that happened. I do think saying you're wrong, saying you're sorry, is very freeing. When you accept responsibility, you accept accountability, I think that gives you actually more power over your own life. It gives you a chance to move to less stains on the window, because most of our stains are because of our own sense of ourselves, ego. How do I know if somebody else is walking in the vanity of their own minds? And this is slippery, because we've got to make sure that we're seeking the truth and don't have hard feelings. We don't have a past that's nagging up, and we don't have a distorted view of our own reality. But typically what I've experienced is, if you hear a lot of stories, wonderful stories about how well things are going to turn out because of some decision a person is about to make or is going to make, and it's just going to be this great thing, and it kind of builds up in you, ooh, I'm going to miss out because they're doing this wonderful thing, you know. Everybody in town is going to make $1 million on worm farms, and somehow I'm going to miss out. Right? Just be careful with that. After they tell you about these, you can typically sense that they start walking with a little bit of extra bounce in their step. They might sway a little bit in their walk. Their heads bob a little bit. Yeah, I'm doing good. This is going to be amazing. And soon after the decision's made, they typically get quiet on the subject. And they almost refuse to answer questions about the situation they'd mentioned they were going to put themselves in. A lot of times, these people tend to take on many projects, and that's because the reality has started to set in on the last project and things aren't going like they had thought, and then they tend to have some big idea that's going to be this amazing thing, and the whole cycle starts over again. Some of these people often move from location to location. They can't hold down jobs. They're inconsistent in their doings and their dealings. And then they put the responsibility on other people, and that tends to make them unreliable, unaccountable, and unrealistic. They're unreliable because of their sporadic nature. They're not going to be held accountable because in the vanity of their minds, they're doing just fine and they didn't actually do anything wrong. They're unrealistic because their morality often changes to suit what they think will make them look good. It's okay for me to do this, but it's not okay for you to do that. Well, that was 2 weeks ago when I did it, and that's okay, but now we're now, and now it's not okay for you to do that because that's going to make me bad, and that's wrong because I don't look bad and I didn't do anything wrong. Many probably believe whatever they're saying at the time because, again, they're living in the emptiness of their own minds. Again, it's you have bent logic. The whole thing's bent. And you're trying to think of it straight. And therefore, it just doesn't line up. Now, you can at least make sense of the logic if you look at it through a bent lens or maybe not a bent logic, but maybe a stained logic. And if you look at it through the right stained glass, it'll make sense that that's what they're thinking. But when you make it to a clear glass, and if you know you're looking at a stained glass, and you switch to the clear glass, then you can kind of see the distorted picture that they're getting. But it makes sense when you kind of look at it through their angle by putting yourself in their shoes and trying to see things from their understanding. A lot of these stained glasses, they come from hurt feelings. They come from hurt relationships. They come from perverted or distorted authority pictures. The challenge is when we actually experience one of those situations, the only thing we should actually take out of those situations. So let's say you're 20 years old and you've been hurt by the authority of an Amish church of some sort. The only thing that you should take from that is the wisdom that actually comes from that. And what I mean by that is you can take so many hurt and hard feelings and problems that come from that your glass becomes more stained. But if you take the wisdom and only the wisdom that comes from that, your glass becomes less stained. And the liking that I would use would be like a cat. If you take a cat and that cat sits on a hot stovetop or something, that cat will not sit on a hot stovetop ever again. But it won't sit on a cold one and it won't go near. I don't know if that makes any sense, but it's like, you end up in a situation where you create yourself more harm by staining the glass than you do by trying to clear it and only learning the wisdom that comes from it. Like I said, those tend to come from hurt feelings, the shaping that's happened due to childhood friends that maybe weren't the best to be around. Television and media, really bad about staining your glass. Be really careful. But some of these people with stained glasses walking in the vanity of their minds, if you give them advice to the contrary of what they're telling you, they may stop talking to you for a while. And that's not because you've done anything wrong. It's because a lot of times your words are somewhat of a reminder of kind of the bad decisions that they make. And then while you're giving them advice, if you're discussing these things, you can find that they typically don't have any room for your advice. They're not asking questions. Let's say somebody's got a stained glass and they're talking about buying a yellow sports car. And you maybe give them advice, but they're just running down all these reasons. No, it's going to be great. Da, 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 da. It's, you know, the sports car is amazing. It'll be family friendly. It's not really that bright of a yellow. You know, the wheels aren't that shiny. You know, they're not asking questions. Well, why? You know, why is that? Do you really think that's that way? If I get that, do you think that's going to affect my life in a negative way? They're not asking those questions. They're giving you the answers. Most of the time, it's because their glass is stained. In closing, I believe one of our greatest endowments is the ability to reframe and reinterpret difficult circumstances in a more enlightened and empowering way. Dogs can't do this, cats can't do this, monkeys can't do this, and that's a gift that I think belongs to us, and it's the hope that comes through a brighter future. But I do feel that blaming our circumstances for the way we feel is nothing more than excusing ourselves. In handling any problem, we must have the courage to assume a measure of responsibility for whatever situations we are in, and then realize that we also have the capacity to use the setback to our advantage. Life's greatest setbacks always reveal life's biggest blessings. While maintaining the attitude of Christ and accepting responsibility, we can have a positive outlook, knowing that all things work together for good to those that love God and are called according to His purpose. So let's labor for a love of the truth, which is greater than a love for our own self-esteem, and refuse to walk in the vanity of our own minds. God bless.